Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com, and recorded live from the world's new media capital and the hometown of the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Be the source. And I'm indifferent as to whether the source is the newspaper, online, TV, or combinations of both, which I think ultimately translate into a 1+1=3. So our goals are high, our time is short. 2008 looks like it's going to be a really shitty year, so we're going to have to do a whole bunch of things to make sure that we don't get hurt. The good news is that the company, from a cash point of view, is in good shape. The more difficult issues for us in 2008 are that our debt has covenants attached to it that we must meet. And the reason we must meet them is when the last piece of the deal was funded, we borrowed $3.7 billion. On the day the banks funded $3.7 billion, the next day they wrote down their loans by $600 million. So they took a $600 million hit to close this deal. So I don't think I want to go back to them and ask them for waivers on anything, because I don't think that would be fun. And as I said, it's all about having fun. So I think it's going to be a lot easier to improve this company, generate more revenue, get everybody a lot more focused than it will be to negotiate with the banks. So all I ask of you is to understand the past is the past. The future is ours, and the future is our opportunity. And I look forward to us all working together toward that objective, because the objective is real. I really think we can make it, and it's time to put pride back into the equation.
You know, in retrospect, I can see why real estate billionaire Sam Zell thought that buying the Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, Orlando Sentinel, and all their related newspapers and media companies, plus the Chicago Cubs baseball team and its home, Wrigley Field, seemed like a classic ploy. Buy a big, you know, family-owned business on the skids for a discount, squeeze out greater efficiencies from its processes, and earn back your purchase price by selling its more valuable assets individually. After that, whatever is left is gravy. That's, you know, that happens a lot. Zell probably thought he was getting in at the bottom of the market. They call him the grave dancer. There's a reason. Unfortunately for everyone, in newspapers, the bottom was still years and millions away. That and the era of leveraging mountains of debt was coming to a crashing halt. Reading Ben Johnson's new business biography, Money Talks, Bullshit Walks, Inside the Contrarian Mind of Billionaire Sam Zell, we get a much better, more favorable understanding of Zell's thinking and a clearer sense of why he did the deal he did and why it was probably destined to fail. Gotta love hindsight. Now, the key takeaway from the book for me, Zell may be an unrestrained Chicago loudmouth, but the lords of American newspapers should have taken his ideas more seriously and the way he expressed himself a little less so. In many ways, he was and continues to be right about what ails their industry and could save it, and they are wrong. Having said that, Ben Johnson, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, good to be here, Bob.
How are you today? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I kind of expected to come away from your book thinking that Sam Zell was a jackass, but I really see him as anything but.
It's interesting. Let me tell you a little bit of background. I mean, I have a a journalism degree from the University of Missouri back from the early 80s, and I was one of the first people to come through their business journalism program. And so I come at this book as a fellow media person. And I always tell people that it would have been really easy to do a book that just slammed the hell out of Sam Zell. And I think people have done plenty of that, and they've done enough of that. But, you know, I knew him also as when I was an editor of a real estate magazine. I first met him in 1995 when he was worth a lowly, you know, $1 billion, you know, before he really made his fortune, you know. So I had known him from a real estate perspective. I knew him as a journalist. And I tried to come up with this book with a more balanced approach as opposed to just – because I thought it would have a lot more credibility than if I just slammed him to try to sell a bunch of books. My goal really was to tell both sides of the story, and I think I did a decent job of uncovering all of his strengths and certainly focused a lot on his weaknesses. So to me, it came out pretty balanced.
I thought it was extremely balanced. And the people I'm really disappointed in, and probably were before I read the book, but they're the old newspaper hacks, the ones who've been staring into the face of their future for the past decade and didn't embrace it when they had the chance.
Yeah, but some of those people are my friends. I mean,
some of them are my friends too.
Exactly. And you know, I absolutely know where they're coming from, and it really is difficult to broach this subject with them because I do think a lot of them have the blinders on.
I mean, to me, they're the ones who are causing the death of print news. Not guys like Zell. I mean, the newspaper business, I think, has been run kind of like the book publishing business and magazines, too, for that matter. It's been run a certain way for a long time, let's say a century or more, and they may let technology in certain ways, like, okay, I guess we could use computers instead of typewriters, and I guess we could transmit stories online versus fax machines and where it has to be recopied. But in terms of the way they run their business and the way they perceive the future, they're as behind the times as the people they criticize in the paper every day.
Yeah, I think one of the most telling interviews I did was with, I was at Missouri in the early 80s. I graduated in 82. So the dean of journalism that I interviewed for the book came in after I left. But the really telling discussion with him, he was very much in – I thought, oh, I'm going to call him, and he's just going to slam the hell out of Zell, just like everybody, you know, Zell hell, the whole thing. Instead, he really gave me a heads up that he really thought Zell was more right than he was wrong. And before, as I picked up my jaw off the ground from a fellow Mizzou, person and a dean of the journalism school, he gave me a really good history of the media, and he gave me a good history of how a lot of media, particularly newspapers, haven't always been run like businesses. And again, it's all in the book, but he had a lot more good things to say about Zell than bad. And that really took me by surprise.
I was thinking about this in a couple ways. I remember around the time that Zell bought Tribune, there was a time, and you talk about this in the book, that other billionaires were thinking about newspapers. David Geffen was interested in the LA Times.
Yeah, and a lot of people are still thinking about newspapers. They just can't get enough of them.
Yeah, but I had said at that time I was doing some freelance work for the Poynter Institute here in St. Pete, and I had said to Karen Dunlap, who runs the institute, you know, maybe you guys should think about doing a private program for these people who are thinking about buying newspapers and to kind of balance the business with the mission and just give them a sense of, what it's like inside the newsroom, what the culture is like. So, because it is very different. Anyone who's worked in a newsroom knows that it's very insulated from the real world. Even though they cover the real world, they never cover themselves. And, she laughed and said they'd never go for it. And, I do think, a guy like Zell, he does seem to understand the business. He probably would have gotten off to a more long-term, happier start with his newspapers if he had put a little more time in to understand them. But, I mean, it's just not the guy he is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the Tribune deal was really the catalyst for my deciding to write the book. I mean, I always knew him as a real estate guy. And I think the media knew him as a real estate guy and continues to describe him as a real estate guy. And so when I had the same reaction everybody else did. Like, what in the world is he doing? Because we all knew, you know, when he started coming about in early 2007, we all knew newspapers were, you know, the death of print had been talked about for God, ad nauseum for years, and continues to be talked about that way. But yeah, it's funny. Zell, the same day Zell was selling his real estate company for $39 billion, the biggest office landlord in the country, that very same day, he was starting his pursuit of Tribune and made the first initial feelers. And he has a saying that on any given day, if you're not buying, you're selling, and vice versa. So, I mean, he lived true to his mantra. I mean, at the same day he was selling, he was buying. I think he got in. He's typically a very astute investor. I mean, he continues to be highly regarded in the real estate and even the business community. He's on CNBC all the time and Bloomberg. And it's because he really he's gotten it right more often than he's gotten it wrong. I mean, when he fails spectacularly, as he's done with Tribune. But he's really astute. I mean, he's a smart guy, even though he's got his JD, he's a lawyer. He's still a smart guy. Just kidding.
little cut there.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, he really does know a lot about demographics. You ask him about any obscure real estate market in Brazil, and he can spew all kinds of studies and background. So, to me, it was still a bit surprising that he took the jump into Tribune, because all the writing on the wall to me said that it ain't going to work. I think you're right. He could have gone into it, though, I think he treated it a lot like he does all of his other businesses, whether it's been plumbing or boxcars or real estate. And he thought he could go in and pretty much rally the troops and, you know, off we go, climbing the mountain, and we're going to scale it, and there we go. But I think, obviously, you and I both know that the media world does work in a different it's a different world. And I think that really took him by surprise, the veracity of the pushback, if you will.
By the way, your remark about lawyers a second ago reminded me of something. You know what they call a bus full of lawyers going off a cliff?
No.
A good start. Sorry to all my lawyer friends.
Yeah, exactly. Some of my friends are lawyers too. Please disregard.
I think my perspective on Zell may be a little different from our fellow journalists too. I would admit I've co-authored a number of books with very successful CEOs and entrepreneurs, and when you've been around these people, you see that they think differently. They look at things differently. They don't accept the status quo. They don't accept because the excuse, well, that's the way we've always done it.
Right.
And they don't stand for red tape. They don't want to be, they don't want to be put off. They want to deal with things. And newspapers are full of red tape. They're full of status quo. They're full of people who are just trying to protect their little fiefdom. And that's the kind of ground that Zell apparently loves to stomp on.
Well, I think I'm not going to generalize and say that the media doesn't like entrepreneurs, because I think the media likes a certain type of entrepreneur. An entrepreneur like Zell is, he said, I think your opening clip was really funny, because that was so Zell, if you heard that that speech. He had so many edges to him. He's not a polished entrepreneur. I mean, he's a learned man, but I mean, he has the lexicon of a Howard Stern. And he'll tell you, I mean, he's just not afraid to take you on. The interesting thing about him, though, is he's also, what I think got lost in a little bit of the discussion, is he's not afraid to be taken on. And I think that there will be some journalists who will disagree with that, in the sense that they tried to take him on and they got, they got pounded. But at the end of the day, Zell is a person who sort of lives by that 11th commandment, which is, thou will not take thou shalt not take oneself seriously. I mean, he pokes fun at himself all the time. But he's just I think to a lot of media people, he's just kind of weird, you know, and and just had too many edges, too much in your face, I think. Just a little bit too much pushback and asking them to really change the way they do business. It's like you said, it's been ingrained.
Well, I have another clip of Sam, and this is probably the most famous one, and I think it's been way overplayed in the sense, I don't mean that people have heard it too many times, but the significance of it has been overplayed.
This must be
the FU thing.
Huh?
It is. Listen to this, and then I want to talk to you about the use of four-letter words, which, of course, you never hear in newsrooms. So give a listen to this, folks.
I'm a journalist. I kind of want to know what your viewpoints are on journalism and the role it plays in the community, because we're not the penny saver.
My attitude on journalism is very simple. I want to make enough money so I can afford you. It's really that simple, okay? You need to, in effect, help me by being a journalist that focuses on what our readers want and therefore generates more revenue. We understand unequivocally that the heart and soul of this business is the editorial side of the business. That's our content. But if we don't have the revenue, it doesn't really matter.
But what readers want are puppy dogs. And, I mean, we also need to inform the community.
I'm sorry. I can't, you're giving me the classic, what I would call, journalistic arrogance of deciding that puppies don't count. I don't know anything about puppies. What I'm interested in is how can we generate additional interest in our product and additional revenue so we can make our product better and better. And hopefully we get to the point where our revenue is so significant that we can do puppies and a rat. Okay?
So if you didn't hear it there at the end when the applause is coming up, and I thought he made a tremendous speech there, and that was just a small clip of it. He said F you basically, but it wasn't clear because he had turned away. I watched the video. He had turned away. He had said it. I'm sure it was directed at the person who asked the question, who was incredibly naive and full of herself. But more than anything, what I don't get is, I found that the newspaper people who claimed that Zell's, shall we say, colorful language in newsrooms, I just thought they were being hypocritical. I mean, everything I learned about cursing, I learned in newsrooms. And, you know, for journalists to act like they are the daintiest of little old ladies when a Sam Zell drops an F-bomb, you know.
I will never... somebody the other day asked me, what did I admire about Sam Zell? Well, you know, I don't admire Sam Zell any more than I admire anyone other than my parents, you know. But I won't say he does everything right and he says everything right or wrong. But in that case, I agree with you. It was blown out of proportion because did people bother to dig through the backstory? Okay, why did he say it? Instead, it just became de facto, he said it, he's a bad man. And there really is a backstory behind that. She turned her back on him. He does not like disrespect. And again, he doesn't really mind telling somebody to F off if he thinks that, you know, that's how it caught him. It's tough though for me. I mean, being in the media for so many years and I do see that side of the equation, and I do see the fact somebody's asking me to change. They're asking me to do something that I was schooled in. I've been doing for 25 years, you know, that's hard. But for Zell, it's easy. I mean, he's been changing all his life, you know. I mean, here's a guy who doesn't stick to any one industry, and people think he's been in real estate all his life. Well, right now his real estate empire is less than 50% of his empire, and sometimes it's been up to 80%. So, you know, here's a guy who changes all the time, and I think kind of expects other people to jump on the bandwagon and most media people don't, you know, they're not ready to get on that.
Well, I mean, listen, there's no doubt change is hard, especially in the newspaper business. But I would hurry to add to that, being unemployed is harder. And if you're in a business, in a career, in a position, and you don't recognize what is happening all around you, the change that is coming, you're just gonna be unemployed. And you know, people who are, you know, there's some people who are genuinely losing jobs in the newspaper industry, and for no fault of their own. It's not because they didn't have the vision. It's not because they didn't see what was coming. It generally is because the people who are making the business decisions were too comfortable for too long, didn't feel the need to revolutionize what they did or their thinking. And along comes Zell, and no, I mean, he's not perfect by any means in this, but, you know, he's brought a cold slap of reality. And I think what he said to that woman up until that FU, and you know, I can say fuck you, was I thought it was right on the money. And it probably fewer people would have heard it if he hadn't added that little thing at the end.
Well, I think, yeah, and a lot of that clip got edited, you know, on YouTube and other places, just got edited down to the very last part of it rather than his speech and the applause. You know, it really is hard, though. Journalists should never sell themselves out, but I think they discounted Zell's ability to understand consumers, maybe even better than a lot of media folks, as to where things were going. Now, Zell's not a real technophobe or anything. You know, he's internet savvy to a point, but, you know, we all have to recognize that we have to change. I mean, you've had to change. I've had to change. I mean, nobody's a bigger print fan than I am. I've worked for weekly, daily, you know, monthly newspapers, magazines. I have magazines all over my house. I'm a real print textile guy. But, I mean, a lot of my stuff now is online because from a business standpoint, just the cost of producing print is just – but by the time you've done the paper and the ink and the distribution, it's just not economically feasible. And I think that's what he was trying to say. And he probably could have said it a little bit better. He could have been nicer and happier about it to get everybody on board. But he didn't have time, and he really lost a lot of time as the business came crushing down on him.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that the last month Zell stepped away from the CEO slot and promoted Randy Michaels. Has Michaels gotten as much crap? I mean, his background is in radio, but you know, newspaper people generally have not had any higher regard for radio people entering their business as they would TV or anything else. Has Michaels been kind of unscathed because all the attention's been on Zell?
No. Something just surfaced the other day that I was reading about, and I think I can say this on your show. I'm not a big cursor, but someone, I forget who it was. It was a columnist, or I'll just call it a journalist. Found that Michaels was, I mean, sort of a shock jock back in the day. He was a DJ. Okay, now DJs have to have personalities, right? Everybody has to have a certain amount of ego when they're in that kind of role. And one of the things that was uncovered, apparently, was that he allegedly walked around the office with a rubber penis around his neck. And, okay, so that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I almost want to say, well, so what? I mean, He's in the business to shock people. That's how you get and keep an audience. That's what he does. Now, can he transition into a role to lead this huge media conglomerate? Yes, I think so, because I think what gets lost in that discussion, that's a distraction. He's actually a pretty good manager and businessman, and it's been proven throughout his career. So, again, I think that was sort of almost like a divide-and-conquer kind of tactic where – Let's focus on Sam's language, or let's focus on Randy's rubber penis. Let's not focus on can they do the job? Are they sending out the right message?
Hmm. Well, we're about to run out of time, and I want everybody to know you can find Ben Johnson's new book, Money Talks, Bullshit Walks, Inside the Contrarian Mind of Billionaire Sam Zell, which I recommend to you. It's very interesting, at great bookstores everywhere, or you can find it online at MrMedia.com. You can also find Ben on Twitter. It's twitter.com/bjohn9. Or check him out on his website, which is Ben W. Johnson, all solid, benwjohnson.com. And, Ben, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. It was very interesting talking to you.
Thanks, Bob. I really do appreciate it.
All right. Take care of yourself.
You too.
Bye-bye. And, folks, for more interviews with journalists and CEOs, for that matter, please visit our main website, MR Media, MrMedia.com. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media, and thanks for listening.